It's time to enter the confessional booth. Good morning, everyone. Jurassic Views, Zaya Quinn, and Bryce Diamond on a bright, crisp Saturday morning. I wish they were all like this, Zaya, in November. I wish they were all like this. However, I don't wish... Outside looks beautiful. Okay, but inside beautiful. Inside my heart does not, because... We lost last night 102-101 the Cleveland Cavaliers, and that's what we're here. We're not here for the weather. We're here for NBA basketball, Raptors games. My friend, how did you feel after last night's game?
I think as a fan, an emotionally mature fan, I need to step back and evaluate our team, which means that I have to say that we underperformed in the second half. We didn't bring a sense of fight that we usually do. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we're talking foot on the neck, right? Which we did against the Knicks on the road, against the Wizards on the road. And I think we were predictable in our offensive sets. Kudos to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Coach Bickerstaff, made his relatively young team play up to, not just up to par, but, you know, really exceeded some of my expectations going full well. That I think they were missing Kevin Love and Markkanen. But they fought. I mean, they could have just thrown in the towel, right? They were down double digits. Yep. And going into the third, but again, I just didn't think we came with that kind of that instinct to finish the game. We let them claw back, and we also allowed the refs to dictate a bit. You know, if they were going to call it that tightly defensively, then we should have. You know, I think, you know, Nick Nurse should have gotten a tech. You know, at some point in that second half, knowing the foul trouble disparity was obvious, and guys like OG, who play a pretty physical game, and Fred and even Gary Trent Jr. just weren't getting the calls, and I'm like, okay, I mean, it's not like they're playing a ultra-ly finesse game; they're going to the basket, Bryce. You know, they're banging, they're getting in there. And but again, I don't want to use any excuses, though.
Right.
So this is about development, and this is about how we can be better as a team. And so they'll bounce back. I mean, it's one of those games. Every season, there's one of those games. There's a Jeremy Lamb buzzer beater, right? There's you know, 1 point loss, you know, we miss a tip. You know, you learn from it. You know, I think Coach Nurse his staff and our players are good for it. But
I mean, there was a lot of feelings in the fourth quarter of this game that had some similarities to the Orlando game and had some similarities to the Washington game. Here we were with a double-digit lead in both of those games in the fourth quarter. And we struggled offensively, sputtered around a bit, and the other team got into the game. Luckily for us, our defense was excellent in those games, and we were able to, you know, get just enough, and we had a big enough lead to sneak out the victory. I mean, we only won by one against Orlando in a game we really should have won by six or seven. And, you know, here we were last night just without that big lead, right? Like we didn't – in the fourth, we didn't have the big lead. I think the biggest lead we had was about seven. And, you know, if you're going to miss opportunities and you're going to get nickel and dime by the refs, which we know is going to happen, there's not a lot of room for error. And last night, as you said, our offense just not as crisp and, you know, lacked imagination. And kudos to Cleveland. I actually thought, as I said to you off air, I thought that this Cleveland team was better than the Knicks. Now, I don't think they were necessarily better than Washington, but you put Markkanen on that group and Kevin Love, and maybe they got 10 more points, right?
Yeah, and I actually think they were better without those guys because they can be defensive liabilities. Right. Kevin Love, definitely. And Markkanen, yeah. I think they're playing him at the three, and he can't guard the perimeter. So right. they'll and if that's the case, that's why they have those two big guys. Those two big guys are incredibly talented defensively, right? And they have length. They're smart in terms of positioning. So even Scotty, who has, you know, thus far in this season has been a menace on the boards, right? Like he grabs his own offensive boards, but those guys scouted him quite well. And as soon as he misses, he's not getting another touch, right? And so, or another third touch or whatnot. So I know Ken Birch really was active on the boards, but it wasn't for putbacks, right? He would grab it and then kind of kick it out. So we won the you look at the numbers, Bryce, we won the defensive boards battle. We shot it better from the three. We limited our turnovers. I don't think we had more than 10.
That's right.
We had some solid, you know, bench contributions from Svi, from Delano.
Delano played a great game.
Great game. Even our unsung, the lost sheep, Malachi Flynn even got burned, right? Like he also had some solid contributions. So would you be shocked if we, we won? I mean, we lost by 1 point, for goodness sake, like less than 4 seconds, you know, and that basket was, that lead was taken on the free throw line. Thank you, ref, again. So, again, it's one of those losses that it's like, it stings because it was within reach. It's not a blowout game against the Wizards, or it's not a game against the Chicago Bulls or the Dallas Mavericks, where they're showing that they have supreme talent, at least on the court, and we're still getting our ish together, as they say, right?
Yeah.
I think we turned a corner thus far in the season. So
we'll
see. We're playing the Nets on Sunday.
Yeah. Yes, we are. 3:30, actually, an afternoon game.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we were spoiled week.
Yes.
I mean,
I had a hangover from these games, from the New York and Washington game. Maybe the guys did too.
I got to say it again, bing bong. You know, like we were spoiled in this winning streak and knowing full well that we're still not 100% as a team, right? You're still missing Pascal and Yuta. And so we should be getting them in the next couple of weeks. I think Pascal sooner than later. And I think last night proved that, hey, you know, you add another playmaker on the court for us. High-level playmaker. And then everyone goes down a peg. So OG, Fred, even Gary. We'll see if Cleveland matches up against us the next time we meet them, right? Yeah. We'll see. We'll see who you put on Pascal. We see how your defensive rotations are, you know, when we spread the court, when we go small. We'll see how your bigs can manage. So we'll see. We know we have a lot more to offer. And so I just don't want to feed into that narrative I wanted, if there was anything, I wanted Scotty to have a good game in order for him to maintain his status amongst the rookies, rather than the national media south of the border immediately swinging towards you know, Evan Mobley fandom of this guy is just incredibly talented, which he is. I just think it's actually, there's less parity. I think it's between him and Barnes, it's like a flip of the coin. I wouldn't be surprised if both of them get enough votes at the end, or split the votes rather, like Jason Kidd and Grant Hill did in 94 in a rookie year award. If you ask me, Jason Kidd should have won the award, but I think Grant Hill got a little bit of the privilege love.
We know that
due to his ties.
Speaking of other narratives, as we talk about Barnes and Mobley, I think another narrative in terms of getting a little privilege is Bickerstaff, as the coach of Cleveland, got a little privilege last night. It's amazing to me how the officials deal with reviewing. And J.J. Bickerstaff, I'll tell you, was a guy who has way more confidence as a coach than he should. Way more opportunity to talk the officials in the way that he does than your average coach.
And you could read his lips, Bryce. He was cussing them out, like, outright. And I'm like, oh, okay, they're not going to call him. They're not going to call a tech on him.
Right.
That's how they're going to play it. Okay. Anyway.
Yep. Yep. I mean, when your daddy is in the brass and has screwed over guys to make the league better, we've already covered that story. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, love you. A guy like Bickerstaff gets love. It's frustrating, man. It's frustrating. But at the end of the day, as you've outlined, this was on us. We didn't have that same mentality in this game as we did in the Nick game and the Washington Wizards game. So that's fine. It is what it is. We've had games that we've been able to figure out and get the win. We've had other games that we haven't been able to do that. Now, a couple guys I want to talk about briefly that you mentioned.
And just to add to your point, we're going to keep ourselves accountable and not put this on the refs, because we have championship aspirations. We're not like the Bickerstaff or Kobe Altmans of the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are just trying to get their quote unquote program back to relevancy. Right. We are relevant, and our aspirations is championship. So we're going to look at this game and be like, oh, it's on us. Like, forget the refs. You know, we need to be better, because these are the heights that we want to achieve that are actually much more reachable than the Cleveland Cavaliers trying to pursue.
Just make the playoffs.
Yeah, just to make the for playoffs, the play-in. Gosh, right? Like, they're like trying to hit the clubs with fake ID. You know what I mean? They're just trying to get in.
Right.
Right. Like, we got bar service, man.
I can't wait until Cleveland faces the Knicks in that 9-10 game, and how Bickerstaff feels when he's in MSG trying to get calls from the officials with Spike yelling and with Tibbs barking and all that stuff. That will be good TV. But I did want to look at two guys before we get into some bigger conversations about the Raptors here in this confessional episode on a beautiful Saturday morning. I'm going to hold on to the sunshine today. Last night, Svi did not start and Scotty Barnes did. And you look at Svi's numbers last night and you can tell how much that starting group makes him better. Not taken away from what he did when Scotty was out. He was really, really good. But you can see the leap between the second unit and the first unit for Svi in particular. 1 of 5 from the field, 1 of 3, didn't have the spacing. Luckily didn't turn the ball over, but didn't have the steals. Was a -1. Not too bad, but not great. Finished with 3 points. Now, Delano is able to step up, which was fantastic. Chris Boucher continues to struggle, my man. I don't think Chris Boucher at this point is getting into the lineup when Yuta and Pascal return. That is a conversation. That is a question I'd love you to talk about. Malachi Flynn actually looked really good last night in his 7 minutes. He was a plus four, 2 for 2, had 3 steals in 7 minutes with 5 points. Tell me how you're feeling about this second unit as we begin to look at the return of both Yuta and Pascal.
Well, I think, I gave it a bit more thought this past week as it related to Dragic, someone that you haven't mentioned.
Is he still on our team?
Yeah, man. And I think you can play it this way. Yes, you can weigh it out and see what the market is for him, right? In the next couple of months, see if there's any takers for his contract and his need and his provisions as a veteran point guard. Or you can also see to it when Pascal comes back, because once Pascal comes back and Yuta come back, defensively, you will then have all four guys on the court with a lot more higher defensive acumen and ability. And so if you bring in someone like Dragic, who would be the amongst the five playing in any rotation, would be the worst defender. Right?
Right.
And so your help defense has to be sharp. So sorry, Chris Boucher won't be on that lineup, or Precious Achiuwa won't be on that lineup, right? Because you have to be sharp. It has less to do with just man on man ability. It's also in terms of your rotation, understanding the defensive schemes, knowing their scouting reports. So I think Nick Nurse, he could be playing that card as well to be like, hey, I'm not comfortable playing him in any of these lineups right now because we're still short in our rotation. And Malachi and Delano offer something more stable defensively. That's one way of seeing it.
Yeah.
But this opportunity has also given, like you mentioned, Delano and Malachi a lot more run. And so someone like Malachi, who you outlined, this is what he does. This is who he is. So one, I'm not surprised. What I am is I'm really, kind of content and glad, and even excited, I should say, that he hasn't allowed the DNP or the, lack of playing time affect his confidence, which is really delicate for young players, right? Or even his development. And so he's come in, he contributes, he knows exactly what he needs to do. And one of my only issues was, is he playing it too, safe, kind of being too conservative or risk adverse. So he won't do too much in case he like turns the ball over but he stepped into a 3-point shot in the offense. He gets in there, against Garland, who's his contemporary, which I think he can, given them, yeah. Garland just gets more minutes and therefore can produce, at a higher rate because of his usage. Malachi is up there. If Malachi is on one of those teams, he can very well do the exact same thing. So he may lack in maybe athleticism or kind of, speed, kind of quickness, but he's there in terms of talent and knowledge of the game. So I guess, Nurse is going to continue doing this kind of back and forth between Delano and Malachi, in the first half and the second half. I'm not a big fan of it only because Delano is doing very well. And so I'm like, you gotta make a decision here, right? Mm. And I know the 905, the 905 season is coming up and it has started really. And so, one of them is going to have to get a lot more reps. And I think once Pascal comes back, I wouldn't be surprised if you put Precious in there too, just so he can get a better sense of his own abilities, right? Like there's a few times where he's
you know, his he doesn't know, you know, he doesn't have a lot of confidence in his jumper, or, you know, and which to me it has a lot more to do with reps and confidence, right? He's cleaned up a few things so far, right? Limiting his turnovers, deferring to his teammates. But, you know, I think he'll get there. Sorry, I went off from Malachi and jumped to Precious, but I'm looking at those guys in terms of having more reps, and I don't know if they're going to get it in the primary rotation once everyone comes back, because I think by default Nurse is going to rely on Delano based on not just size, but based on what he's already produced.
Right. Well, a guy like Flynn and even a guy like Banton, like both of those guys last night, they play, you know, less than 15 minutes, 7 and 12 respectively between the two of them. They were very efficient in those minutes. I mean, Delano, for heaven's sakes, had 11 points in 10 minutes. If you send these guys down to the G League and it's an afternoon game, you know, it's not the best for the body to then, after playing 30 minutes, to be available to play 10 to 15 at night, or even 5 to 10. But it's okay. Like, you can get away with doing stuff like that. We know from the past that guys have done that kind of stuff. But you're right. When Yuta returns and when Pascal returns, a guy like Precious is a lot easier in some ways to send down, because you're not asking him to do the things that Delano and Malachi would have to do, which is make decisions, you know, dribble the basketball, defend hard against
playmaker.
Yeah, that kind of stuff, right? So I could see Precious going down as well. I mean, he only played 18 minutes last night. I think he's, in the last few games, he's stayed under 25 minutes total. But it'll be interesting. There's a lot of – we've talked about the depth, but there is a lot of depth on this team. I know Nick likes to play more 9-man rotations than 10-man rotations. But I've said this in a few post games. I don't know if you have been part of these post games, but when I look at the bench, okay, when I look at that second unit, who is part of that second unit? Malachi Flynn is in that next five guys. I've got Delano Banton. I've got Kem Birch, because I actually like Kem coming off the bench and then closing in second halves. I got Svi Mykhailiuk, and then I've got Yuta Watanabe bouncing Chris Boucher. Now, when I look at that group, it reminds me a lot of that 2017-2018 bench mob. You know, Svi Mykhailiuk is a better CJ Miles. Malachi Flynn obviously looks a lot like Fred Van Vliet in his game. Delano Banton reminds me of Delon Wright, which is hilarious. And then Kem Birch kind of plays that Serge Ibaka role, right? Obviously different personalities, and Kem, you know, no knock to him, but he's not as good a TV personality as
you mean. You mean Pirtle, because Serge Ibaka was later. So Jakob Pirtle was part of that bench mob.
Yeah, but didn't I was pretty sure that Serge played with that in 2018. He came off the bench. Valanciunas started, and Pirtle played with him because they didn't play Serge and Valanciunas at the same time.
Yeah, maybe I'm a sucker for kind of that bench mob being part of the youth movement, right?
Right.
Plus CJ Miles, but. Serge was just a little bit more talented.
Oh, sure. But he was part of the second unit. That's all I'm
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Wow, man, we had that. Yeah, wow.
And then you get Pirtle and, you know, you could put Pirtle and Yuta in the same kind of, you know, grouping.
Or Pascal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's fun, man.
You know, I did give another guy I gave – further thought to was, you know, Chris Boucher, you know, is there a way to reclaim, you know, for him to redeem himself? And absolutely, yes. But you remember back in the day when, I don't know if you, I came across, you know, some interview of Tim Duncan, you know, talking about Robert Horry. And Robert Horry during the regular season, especially in the latter years, was just like, he was, you know, like during regular season, he was just so frustrating because he'd make mistakes.
Yeah.
He'd be late on defensive rotations. You would think that this guy's out to lunch.
Right.
Right. But as soon as the playoffs started, Bryce, this guy was just on a different stratosphere.
Yeah.
Both defensively and offensively. Right. Big shot, Horry, you know, we know.
Big shot, Bob.
Exactly. But, you know, and I'm not trying to suggest that Chris Boucher is the mold of Robert Horry, the illustrious Robert Horry, the legend. But I don't know if maybe that's, you know, sometimes he needs a level of competition, stakes to be higher.
Right.
Kind of click. The season is a grind. And so for some players, it's boring, really, for them, right? And so,
right.
And you know, let's be honest, Robert Horry wasn't his usage rate wasn't so high, and he was playing with Hall of Famers, the Parkers, Ginobili's, you know, Duncans and Robinson. So, to the degree in which he was surrounded by great talent, so it could allow him to carve out his space. I think the person that has needed Pascal the most is Boucher, right? You know, Pascal attracts double teams consistently.
Yeah.
And so it allows someone like Chris Boucher time to, you know, wind up at the three-point line or even to make these necessary cuts in the dunker spot for him to be kind of this elastic, you know, fluid offensive big man, in and around the hoop, both in the open court as well as in the half court. So with some, you know, with defensive sets being so predictable with the ball in the hands of Fred or OG when they isolate at the top of the key, it doesn't give much wiggle room, right, for someone like Chris Boucher and his limited, little legitimate offensive tools. So he does have limitations. So we're, you know, we acknowledge that. So I don't think he'll be buried in like he'll be with Isaac Bongas of the world. Right.
Right.
But I think in terms of certain matchups, it's a long season. There could be some injuries. We'll see, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Chris Boucher makes, you know, gets out of the not only the doghouse, but also out of his head and reasserts himself.
Right. Robert Horry, I just brought up his stats here. I appreciate you referencing Robert Horry. Robert Horry never played in the regular season more than 19 minutes a game. And the year they won the championship in 2007, his regular season point averages were 3.9. Then you go to the playoffs. He actually in 07 only scores 4.3 points a game. His minutes are still pretty low. But the biggest year for Robert Horry when he played for San Antonio, again, all the minutes were under 20 minutes a game. And his point totals were under 7 a game. In 2005, when they beat the Pistons, which was a very competitive final, it goes to 7 games. Pistons had won the year before versus the 2007 Cleveland Cavaliers series, where they just walked through that series. I think that had to be the lowest rating final in like the modern day history of the NBA finals. But
my gosh, seeing Boobie Gibson just not able to play at that high level, and to me, it was like Tony Parker just having smoking a cigar, wearing a wearing a towel, you know, across his waist and walking through the court. Man, that's probably the easiest competition he's had in a
Month.
But I digress.
But you look at Robert Horry's numbers in the playoffs: 27 minutes a game in that 2005 year, and he almost averages 10 points a game It's impressive the difference. And he shot 45% from downtown in the playoffs that year, 45% through the entire playoffs in 23 games, whereas in the regular season, he shot 35%, like unbelievable. Now, I don't think Chris Boucher is anywhere near that, but is it possible that he's in a funk? Is it possible, you know, without Yuta and Pascal there, he's not getting pushed as much, that there's not as much spacing as there could be? It's great questions, man. I appreciate all those questions. The other question I have with this second unit as we go through these guys, when Pascal comes back, and we've talked about this, but I want to revisit it for just a second. What happens to Scotty Barnes?
You know, this is where the conversation around Rookie of the Year is going to be unfortunate, because his usage rate is going to decrease. His numbers are definitely going to go down to probably where he's not going to take 19 shots. Let me just put it that way. Like last night,
I mean, half of those are tip-ins, but
yeah. And evaluators are going to suggest, well, because his usage rate is lower, he's playing with him, you know, with players like Pascal, Fred, and OG, he shouldn't be considered. Not at all. I still think he's one of the better rookies. We're talking top tier rookies. Like I'm one, or, you know, to be honest, top three. And usually it's a numbers game because of marketing and branding. So he's going to lose out on, you know, the committee's going to defer to, you know, his other contemporaries. But I think he will stay on that starting lineup. I also think they will often go small,
right,
and have him or OG rotate at the center position.
There's no pick and rolls against the Raptors if Pascal, Scotty, and OG are playing in the same
game. No one's, I mean, they're all switching. So what are you going to try to do here?
They're going to blow up those pick and rolls.
And I think I think they'll monitor Pascal's health. And so I won't be surprised if, you know, Birch comes in or starts, you know, sometimes, especially against those mega big centers like a Jokic or an Embiid. I think they'll, you know, roll the dice against a Robin Lopez, right? Or is it Brook Lopez, his brother out in Milwaukee?
Right.
Exactly. I think he'll still get his minutes. Nurse, I think, is unconvinced that he can be dethroned, right? Like, he thinks the world of him. My only concern is, how is he going to learn how to play with Pascal, right? Because he and Pascal do very similar things, right? They can grab the board, go coast to coast, create and play make, take that mid-range jump shot or take it to the basket. They're not high three-point shooters. So it's going to be interesting. But I think this guy is team first, right? And he has no ego, unlike some other NBA players, right? Having to prove himself, he's like, no, you know, I'm about winning. So what do we need to do? What's the game plan, right? And he'll crash the boards. He doesn't need plays to be run for him in order for him to score, which is another knack and ability that he has, right? So good luck. You're not asking him to play make, so he'll have more energy to crash the offensive boards, to run, to defend. So it's going to be fun, man. It's going to be fun. I just hope that Nick Nurse reduces the number of minutes for these guys like OG and Fred, because I don't think it's sustainable long-term, especially if we make it to the playoffs, because we've seen it. We've seen what it's done to Kyle Lowry in the past, where he doesn't have any more left to give in the tank.
Yeah.
Right. And, so anyway,
interesting.
I'll leave it there.
Now we have some liquor to pour out to a fallen player. Last night, as Source came through, a gift to our fan base. Blake Murphy informed everybody that Sam Decker had been waived. So Sam Decker, who had a very short stint for us, I think, including the walkabout in Toronto, the hangout with Scotty Barnes and Dragic in Toronto. Decker was only with us for like maybe 9 weeks, but Sam Decker has been waived. He just introduced a newborn baby into his life, and now he's been waived. Feelings or thoughts? Any thoughts about this?
Yeah, I mean, these are the realities of the NBA, right? The reality isn't the Kevin Durant and the LeBron James. No, those are the elite. The reality is the guys who are fighting for contracts, right? Yeah. The role players, the guys who are betting on themselves, like Fred, and you know, rolling the dice and seeing if he can make a roster and carve out a career. Or another Canadian that was on the court on Cleveland last night, who didn't get any burn, Kevin Pangos, who bounced around in international ball, finally gets a chance with Cleveland, and he's probably he's not even a third point, he's the third or fourth point guard, right?
Right.
So,
and
he's just really glad to be on to make it to the NBA.
Sure.
Everyone wants to play, but there's just so many jobs, right? And so Sam Decker, I think, you know, he played in Turkey last year, you know, wanting to, you know, re-entry into the NBA. He'll find a roster spot somewhere. He has something that people want, and he's a deadly shooter, and we've seen that at least against the Washington Wizards in the preseason. And he has size as well, right? In the mold of a Nate Robinson. Is it Nate Robinson in Miami? Why am I blanking on his name?
Duncan Robinson.
Duncan Robinson. There we go. Nate Robinson is the 5 foot.
5 foot nine dunk champ.
Yeah,
kryptonite
exactly.
To Superman. Yeah. Hard to mix those guys up, really. Duncan Robinson.
I was tongue tied. I blame Kobe Altman. I have his Wikipedia picture right in front of me. I'm like reading his bio. I'm like, who is this guy? Pour out some liquor for him, some 40s. But he'll be, all the best to him and his family. Mm-hmm. He's still relatively young, you know, in his mid to late 20s. So he'll find a spot in the NBA.
I think he
left a good impression on the Toronto Raptors brass. So GMs and executives talk. So I'm sure he'll come highly recommended.
Yeah, especially to a team that, like, you know, may have an injury on the wing and need a shooter on the second unit, like a Minnesota Timberwolves type team.
Exactly.
I can see him land there. Now, we shouldn't feel sorry for Sam Decker really at all. I mean, we can give him love, but this guy played pretty much 0 minutes in the regular season, got waived less than a month into the season. He still made $350,000 from the Toronto Raptors. In the NBA world, that's peanuts. To you and I, that's 4 or 5 years worth of salary. That's pretty darn good. So we don't have to feel bad for him. His bills will be paid. And he will find himself a safe spot to land, no doubt. But it certainly gives us an opportunity to talk about Goran Dragic a bit and our salary cap as a team. Right now, we're kind of bordering the tax, not having to pay Sam Decker $1.8 million in guaranteed contract money as of Sunday, I believe. Certainly helps. But what are we going to do with Goran Dragic? He's making $19.4 million a year. We're able to trade him come December, I think 15th. What are we going to do with Goran Dragic? We've mentioned him a little bit already, but I think it's still a question mark, right? It's still a question mark.
Yeah, well, no one expected Delano Benton to be this good this soon. So let's be honest. No one expected that after seeing him play in Summer League. He had potential, and we thought that he would be a great asset, great player to add to be added onto the 905 roster. This guy's not he's not going to just be on the 905 roster after, what, 10 games?
Yeah.
Bryce, he you know, his development is going to be part and parcel, you know, in correlation with the main rotation.
Definitely.
He's shown that he can even jump ahead of Malachi Flynn. And I think he also put pressure on Svi, right? Makauluk, to be like, yo, you need to step up too.
Right.
Because if you're not careful and if you're not hitting those threes, you know, Nick Nurse might as well just go, you know, go on a, you know, big lineup and add Delano playing alongside Fred. So I think Dragic, you know, we always talk about his, you know, the veteran element to it. And I don't take that for granted. I think he has a lot to offer, especially to our younger guys. You can never go wrong with having a lot of veterans on the team.
Yeah.
These veterans, you know, who are, you know, want to play, right? I mean, and so they want to, you know, they want to offer, they're not a Udonis Haslam, right? They can still play and contribute on the court, not just off it, on the sideline, or be compliments to the coaching staff. So he still wants to play. I just don't think it's going to be on this team as he expected earlier in the season. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he's traded. And I wouldn't even be shocked if he's waived. I mean, that's going to be an expensive bill to issue out. Will he, you know, be bought out for the full 18, 19 million that he's worth, that he's owed, I should say.
Likely not.
That's up to him, his agent, and, you know, the Raptors front office. But I can see that he can definitely be a better addition to a team beyond the Toronto Raptors, and that will then give some flexibility for Delano, for a Malachi, who I think they're ready for prime time, man. Right?
Yeah.
You know, if you ask me, like, you probably just keep him in case something happens to Fred, like in terms of injury, right? Because it would be a lot to ask for a Delano and a Malachi to take on the full-time reins as a starting point guard in the NBA. These guys, you know, I was watching the game, you know, Bickerstaff. It's interesting, just in the NBA, in terms of scouting, in terms of advanced scouting, in terms of coaching and being tactful, it is competitive and it is hard, right? And if you're going to play the point guard position day in and day out in this league, forget talent. You need to have mental fortitude, because guys are going to come at you every single day, right?
Yeah.
Coaches are coming after you, you know, and so to ask Delano and Malachi to do that, if something happens to Fred, it's hard. That's why Dragic, you know, is kind of like that insurance policy, right?
Right.
Just in case. But if that insurance policy, you know, and hopefully I'm not referring to Dragic like some sort of just asset and in a non-human entity, you know, it's great to have him on the court. But if it runs against the development of Malachi and Delano, you can see to him, you know, see to it that he can be moved. And I don't think he's being toxic in the locker room. We haven't heard anything, at least. So it's all good. But again, Bryce, you pointed it out last week. Fred is playing heavy minutes. He's a small point guard as well, and he's not just a finessed player. He gets some bruises.
Yeah.
So
Last night included, you got to hit twice, no call.
Exactly. So, I mean, you got to at least bring down his minutes, or, you know, you play it conservative and you keep Dragic until you can hold on to him.
Right. Until the
trade deadline.
I mean, for Dragic, being in Toronto, at least until the snow falls, isn't a bad idea. I mean, I'm sure he wants to go to Dallas and play with his countryman, Luka Doncic. But he's 35 years old, and you know at 36 what your body feels like. I know what my body feels like at 43, but there was a shift in my body at about 35, 36, where things just didn't recover as quickly. I definitely felt a shift right around that time. For Dragic, he just played in the Olympics in the summer, right? In August. Yeah. And they went to the semifinal. There was travel, obviously, involved in that. There was a lot of strictness around social movement. Until and as there, fun, you know, as fun as he had with Luka Doncic, I'm sure this guy is happy after 14 seasons in the NBA to get a little more recovery time. And as we've seen with a number of guys, you mentioned Robert Horry, James Harden played into shape, quote unquote. We've seen Draymond Green play into shape. Goran Dragic has got lots of time. He will be a guy who can be called upon in a playoff series. Is he going to be the main focus or even in a starting group? No, but he could be a great guy coming off the bench to spell minutes for people. And he could be even a good guy to close a game. So this time of not playing doesn't bother Dragic at all, but it will be intriguing. It's certainly a very intriguing scenario for the Raptors. If we can trade him or if we buy him out, how much money can we save? Can we save $8 million? Can we save $10 million? All that stuff is going to be really interesting to me. But I think at the end of the day, as you said, Delano Banton and Malachi Flynn development is really important. And we have a 3-year plan to win a championship. 2024, we're winning the championship. The Larry O'B will be in the hands, coddled by Fred VanVleet. So we got to focus on those guys. Speaking of plans, speaking of long-term plans, we have talked about the WNBA coming to Toronto, and obviously we're not the only ones who think this way. The fan base is going nuts for the WNBA, and our own ambassador decided to do some diplomatic work last week with WNBA players, and I mean that in a professional sense. Drake was at the ESPYs, the ESPN Sports Awards, and he was making friends, man. He was making friends for the good of the franchise, for a WNBA team to come to Toronto. I don't know if you saw any of the photos, but there is a lot of love. And he's pushing the expansion. Are we going to get this done already?
I think it's just a matter of time, right? The league has 12 teams, and it needs to expand. You know, it's for women who want to play professional ball, Europe is still the main entry point. And there's just not enough roster spots, to be quite honest, Bryce, to ensure women who are playing even at the NCAA level for them to be drafted in the first round and then join a roster spot. They're getting cut because they're competing with veterans who are coming back from Europe and who are probably at a higher level in terms of or further along their professional careers, that it doesn't give a 21-year-old player time to develop. They don't even have time to develop their own talent at the professional level like the NBA does with the G League. Right. So the infrastructure still isn't there. And so so this goes beyond just the conversation of, do we just want a franchise? No. We need to add more to the actual infrastructure to ensure a sustainable development for women professional basketball in North America. One, two, Toronto being the third, fourth major market in all of North America, is an obvious choice. I think it will continue to kind of appeal to the growth of the game as it parallels, the Toronto Raptors. I think we have the management to do it, right? It's not like we are asking, the WNBA to start a franchise with one of the poor managed franchises of the NBA. I'm not going to call out any names, but
Charlotte.
There's owners out there, right, that are under investigation and so on and so forth. The only drama we have is with one of the shareholders of MLSE. But beyond that, Toronto Raptors is an incredibly well-run organization, and right. As well as MLSE Sports. So I think Drake is complementing the discourse that has already been going and using his platform to do it. So yep. I hope people are reading into it that he's just waving a flag that's, and echoing the voices of other women professionally, and those within the sports broadcasting. I think Amy, she works for Sportsnet. Can you repeat her name again?
Yep. Amy Audibert.
Yeah, she pointed out well in an interview with Will Liu this past week, saying, we need more teams in order for women to secure professional WNBA spots, right? Mm-hmm. So first rounders, who are drafted, had to be cut from teams this past year, and that just doesn't even make sense. Right. So immediately they're going off to Europe. Now, again, there's great leagues. It's competitive. Yep. But if we want to grow the game here in North America, we know the WNBA, the opportunity that lies, especially the big marketing machines that are here. Right. Third party entities, I think it's just a matter of time. I think it'd be exciting. I think they will bring an element of buoyancy to the game, to the sport. I think fans are really going to be drawn to it. I think as we already are here in Canada to women hockey, women soccer. At least at the national level, right? So Bryce, mm-hmm. I mean, if you bring in a WNBA team to Toronto, and they're not at the Rico, they're not at Rico, right? Coliseum, they'll be playing at Scotiabank Arena. I wouldn't be surprised that they sell out.
Right.
And immediately draw the same type of momentum as the Phoenix Mercury's. I can't wait to see which star is going to shine, in a Toronto WNBA franchise, right? Especially the way that we already promote players with the Toronto Raptors. So it's just a matter of time. I think it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time that there's an announcement and a press conference, the commissioner Kathy Eagleburn is sitting next to members of the Toronto Raptors executive branch one member from that executive is probably going to be managing this franchise,
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I agree. I think it's just a matter of time. It's good to see Drake, use his diplomatic leverage and position to do this. People forget, especially Americans, obviously, how big this city is. This is a big market. And when you think of, national coverage in the States, obviously we're not in the United States, but we are, if not as big as Chicago, bigger, if not as big as Miami, bigger. When I look at the ticket prices of NBA games or Raptors games, it's difficult. It's not an approachable number, but we can sell out easily. You look at the numbers for the 905, the ticket prices are $18 for a lot of the tickets. The highest ticket, I think, is like $50. That's very affordable. That's very approachable to, you know, someone who wants to watch basketball. The WNBA probably won't be far off from where the 905 ticket sales are. It's going to sell out. It is going to sell out. Even if it's on, they start playing, you know, in Mississauga where the 905 play, and you have 9,000 to 10,000 people coming to watch a WNBA game. That's a great start. But I agree with you. This is a city that's a big market. This is a city that loves basketball. This is a city that supports women's professional sports. And I could easily see Scotiabank Arena selling out. And that's fantastic. And Drake will be on the sidelines, and other stars will be there too. And it'll just be a good feeling, man, for the city.
And I think it's important, we sometimes go back and forth on the Toronto Raptors fan base, and you know, there's the fan base from 95, right?
Yeah.
And then there's probably a fan base during that emerged out of the Vince Carter years.
Yeah, for sure.
And then there's a fan base that arose during the DeRozan and Kyle Lowry era. And then there's another fan base that appeared during the championship run, right?
Post-championship run.
I don't know the data. I'm sure it could be out there. But I'd be curious to know the demographic, age demographic, right?
Right.
And so when I see the Toronto Raptors fan base, at least on Twitter, right? And having this kind of galvanized support for the WNBA, you know, this is a much socially conscious, culturally intelligent fan base that wouldn't defer from supporting, you know, the Toronto Raptors or the WNBA Toronto franchise, right? Won't often be stuck in these kind of muddy conversations of the quality of basketball to be like,
right.
And you know, like using the Tracy McGrady recommendation of lowering the rim in order for the women to dunk, in order for there to generate more entertainment. Like, goodness gracious. I'm sure he walked back from that statement. But, you know, kind of the just, you know, backward thinking, thinking, you know, that really, you know, some, you know, basketball markets have south of the border, at least. So I think Toronto's fan base will be, you know, really, you know, emboldened to see another basketball team, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's the WNBA, just another basketball team, because you also see a huge support in the CBL. And this season will be for the summer, right? Which is a different kind of season. So you'll even attract a different type of crowd coming out. So I think, there's a window of opportunity that the MLSC, which I think are going to be the main actors here. I can't see any other type of ownership group
bid
that's legitimate that the WNBA will be willing to take a risk on. So, the way that the tickets are going up, Bryce, with both the Toronto Raptors and how the Leafs have always had high, unreachable levels in terms of their tickets, they got the revenue, trust me, franchise, basketball franchise, and specifically WNBA, and invest in these women to ensure that they we set a precedent, right, of them being compensated, you know, better than they would be if they go to Europe, because Europe probably still signs the best talent because they can compensate their women athletes. right. better than sometimes the WNBA or, you know, North American leagues for women. So I'll leave it at that for now, but definitely excited.
Very exciting. Very exciting. My friend, we only have a few minutes left in this confessional Saturday morning.
Who were you going to talk? What else do we got talking points?
I was going to ask if you had any other thing that you want to talk about. We have Muslim Solidarity Night was last night. We could talk about that. We have the city jerseys as well. We have the Eastern Conference landscape right now. Any of those that you want to take a crack at that you just want to express your feelings and thoughts about?
Quick speed round. We did an episode on Mahmoud Abdul-Raouf last year, season one. I think that it spotlighted in the month of February, March. And I think it was fun. It was informative, insightful. It was great to see old footage. He probably broke the barrier as in terms of representation and for Muslim athletes in the NBA. Got the short end of the stick and really, I think, got blackballed. And I think the NBA has been trying to do a better job in reclaiming his status and in the NBA brotherhood. So, and so just, I only bring that up because of the Muslim Solidarity Night, which the Toronto Raptors hosted against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Also is really tied to the events in London, the tragic events in London, and how both the Muslim Canadian community has kind of rallied in ensuring that there's a form of kind of restorative justice being done. But the MLSC, I think the Toronto Raptors, Bryce, and the Leafs held kind of fan experiences during the preseason in London, Ontario. So again, I'm not going to say that, you know, the Toronto Raptors or MLSC are perfect entities for social justice. They're not, but I think they're still leading the way as it relates to ensuring that, you know, we address some of the kind of the social ills that we're still experiencing in our world, even if it's just the Muslim Solidarity Night, you know, for during a game.
Yeah.
Awesome. And the other topic I think was the city jerseys. Cop them. I'm a big fan of them. I actually think it's the best city edition. City jerseys are the best that we've had so far. So I'll make it quick. Cop them. End of story. If you don't cop them, donate your money to a local charity supporting an organization, let's say in Rexdale, right?
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. Well, as always, a pleasure to talk with you, man. Hopefully you get outside and soak up that sun, and may that sun be a brighter light and bring better feelings than the game last night. But we got a game tomorrow. You know, when I looked at this weekend, I thought we'd go one-on-one. One and one. I guess we're going to beat the Nets instead of the Cavs. What can I say?
Bryce, does Bing Bong apply to the Brooklyn Nets? I'm sorry, man. I think that made my week. That win in Madison Square Garden just, you know, set the enthusiasm level for my week, man. I'm good. We good.
We good.
Despite the loss last night.
Yeah. I mean, if you'd have told me we were 6-4 through 10 games with no Pascal, I'd be pretty happy with that. Let's go get another 6 in the next 10 and make our march to the All-Star game with a solid playoff spot, right? And then we'll go from there. But a solid start through 10. Lots of exciting things to talk about, and can't wait for the Yuta and Pascal return. Until then, we'll look forward to your return next weekend. And who knows? Who knows what will happen this week? We might even get you back on a post-game show. Bing bong.
Peace, listeners. Enjoy the weekend.
Yeah, I'm like Neo now. No, that was good. That was good.
That's Morpheus.
That's it. Fair enough.